Item 10, discussion and review of law enforcement assets in response to oyster poaching. As Colonel Lauderman's coming up to the podium, let me just tee this up a little bit for you. You may recall from the last, at the last commission meeting, there was a relatively brief discussion about concerns about oyster poaching and vessel monitoring systems and how they might be an asset to solving that problem. And I had offered a very quick opportunity to Colonel Rhodes to respond, and it was quite brief. And after the meeting, I felt like we really hadn't given that that issue enough discussion. There's a lot of things that the law enforcement division has been doing on this issue that I think deserves your attention, and so I ask the Colonel to prepare a presentation for you today on this topic and more or less describe what we're doing, what we plan to do, and where we're headed on this issue. And after his presentation, I'll have a few final follow-up comments.
Yes.
It's all yours.
Good morning, Commission members. I'd just like to give you a brief snapshot of poaching enforcement, some successes we've had, and some challenges that we're going to face in the future. Oyster populations have grown substantially over the past 5 years. Oyster harvests have almost tripled in the past 5 years. Harvests have increased from 95,000 bushels in 2008 to an expected 250,000 bushels in 2012. More oysters in the water means more opportunity for poaching. The Marine Police have focused on oyster violations over the past 2 years. A combined total of 393 oyster summonses were issued in 2011 and 2012. So that gives you an idea of what we've been focusing our attention on. This was triple the usual number of summonses issued in a two-year period. This initiative resulted in 205 convictions with 123 cases pending court action. There's a conviction rate of approximately 76% of the cases adjudicated, with more to come. How does that compare to past enforcement? A total of 129 summonses were issued for oyster violations in the previous 2 years, in 2009 and 2010 combined. That resulted in 107 convictions. This conviction rate was 83%. So our conclusion is oyster summonses are up and the conviction rates are maintaining a high level. In 2012, 240 summonses, 2011, as you can see the graph from 2008, we focused our attention on oyster violations mainly because of complaints from the industry, and private lease owners have consistently called us and say that they're having problems on their grounds with theft. We have dedicated our resources to include full-time patrols. We have dedicated officers that do nothing but oyster enforcement. And that's why there's a result in a larger number of summonses, because we realize there is a problem and we're addressing it. Now, the types of oyster violations in 2012, summonses included the following: dredging without a license, harvesting without a license, oystering in a sanctuary, oystering at night, theft and grand larceny, exceeding daily bushel limits, and uncalled, taking oysters from condemned waters, which, of course, is a public safety issue. We take that very seriously. In the last year, 5 summonses were issued for taking oysters from a sanctuary, 4 were taking oysters from waters condemned for shellfish harvesting, and 25 were taking oysters in a closed area. Currently, we do have a license suspension policy. Violators with 3 or more convictions within a 12-month period may be brought before you for action. This policy has been in place since 1996. 2 years is the maximum suspension allowed by law. Staff is preparing a policy revision for your consideration. Under consideration is ranking the severity of violations, with the most egregious behavior allowing commission action on a first offense. And that would be possibly theft from a sanctuary, theft from a closed area, which would be a public problem. Under consideration, Fisheries Chief O'Reilly is surveying the additional advisory committees for their input on those rankings, so that should be forthcoming. more enforcement is needed. An increase in oyster violation is a strong indicator of a rise in oyster poaching overall. Private oyster ground leaseholders have complained that watermen are stealing from their ground, especially in the James River. The majority of our complaints are coming from leaseholders in the James River, and that's where most of our attention is focused. And a large number of these violations are from the James River and the Rappahannock area. Some information suggests that sanctuaries have been raided. In talking to Dr. Wesson, he has told us that he thinks that the sanctuaries have been raided quite often. By his surveys, he can tell that the oysters have been removed. Now, we're talking about marine staffing and shortages. I think you'll find this pretty incredible. Funding cuts over the past 5 years have depleted the number of marine police officers. This staffing shortage is straining efforts to maintain a focus on oyster violations and other violations and search and rescue and everything else that the marine police do. The number of budget-authorized marine police officers is currently 77. A lot of people find that pretty amazing that we cover from the fall line of Richmond up in the Potomac, North Carolina, all the way to Maryland with 77 officers. That's a very small amount of officers if you look at the total square miles that we have to cover. The number of actual fill positions right now is 66. Three MPOs have turned in retirement papers and are pending. Two additional MPO positions are at risk due to reduction in the JEA agreement funds. Because of sequestration, we still don't know right now what our funds will be, if any. And if we do lose that, we're going to lose two more officers. In comparison, in 1981, the Marine Police had more than 80 filled uniform officers' positions. And from 1981 to present, the duty and responsibilities since then have increased, not substantially, but dramatically. With the number of regulations, search and rescue, accidents we have to investigate, you can imagine what, you know, it has increased. This is a staff level history. As you can look from 1990 to current, it's remained fairly steady. We had an increase in 2005. We were given 10 additional positions, but they were never filled due to lack of money and later rescinded. So we're back down to 77 with only 66 right now, with a possibility of losing several more in the next couple months. This is an agency staff level history that you can look at that graph. It shows in the blue the Marine Police and then the FTEs that are authorized in the brown. It basically goes over what we were talking about on the Marine Police side. Where do we go from here? The Marine Police will continue to vigorously enforce regulation as manpower allows. Expect egregious violators to come before you for potential sanctions. If matters do not improve, staff will investigate the cost of implementing a vessel monitoring system, as is required to participate in some federal fisheries such as scallops. And talking to Mr. Palmer this morning before the meeting, he came out with an excellent idea that you may consider. He suggested that if we catch somebody with an egregious violation and they're convicted in court, that we may require to put the VMS system on their boat for a length of time. And we can actually watch them, where they go and what they do. And this may be a big deterrent for other people. The vast majority of the oystermen are honest and do a good job. There's just a few. And I don't necessarily believe that we should require VMS on all boats, maybe just the ones that get caught. And that's the end of the slide. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
I think the numbers, in my view, speak for themselves and clearly show that with respect to oysters, we have an epidemic of poaching going on out there. I don't think there's no denying it. Now, the number of summonses are up, which is, I think, shows that the department is doing what it's supposed to do. But, you know, for every guy you catch, how many are out there that you don't catch? So I think the numbers speak for themselves in that regard. I think we've got to do more in the area of license revocation. I hope you would agree with me on that. There's still a number of cases that are making their way through the court, but as they do, I would suggest we need to see some of those individuals before us for license revocation. And I know Mr. O'Reilly is working on some revisions to the revocation policy that's been in place now for quite a while. But under that current policy, an individual is allowed 3 violations of the law, at which point he gets an invite to the commission.
Within 12 months, though.
Within 12 months. 3 violations within 12 months. He gets an invite to the commission. And typically what is done at that meeting is he's put on probation. And he gets to violate the law a fourth time. And then at that point we start talking about license revocation. That broad of a policy that applies universally to all violations, I think, is not sufficient of a deterrent. The Colonel showed us violations that involve harvesting in condemned shellfish areas. There you're talking about significant public health events that could, God knows what the effects would be on industry when those kinds of things happen. Harvesting in sanctuaries, as hard as we have worked to resurrect the oyster industry, to me, harvesting in a sanctuary, harvesting at nighttime, these are all violations that deserve more consideration than we're giving in terms of license revocation. So Mr. O'Reilly will be presenting a report to us in the not-too-distant future on the recommendations from the various advisory committees as to which offenses they believe rise to a higher level where they should be pulled out for license revocation. And I think to assist the staff in that process and to assist law enforcement in other enforcement issues, I think it's time that we have a subcommittee of the commission appointed for those purposes to assist staff. And so I haven't spoken to any of you about that, but in the next day or so I intend to ask 3 of the commission members to serve on a law enforcement committee that would involve sitting down with staff, the Colonel and his staff, Mr. O'Reilly and his staff, to formulate a way forward to address these problems and to also look at this vessel monitoring system. It's not something that, you know, I particularly like to see happen, but the fact is, with the limited number of officers that we have on the water, we've got to get smarter in how we go about enforcing these things. And if it takes electronic means, then we ought to, you know, bring that forward for the public to debate and consider. So, I mean, that's sort of where I am on this issue, and I'd love to hear from the rest of you as to where you are. Mr. Palmer?
What I'd like to see is next month a public hearing on VMS, but strictly for violators that are being convicted. And then the following month we can put into regulation where if you have been convicted as a part of getting your hand scrape license for the following season or for that season, if it's early in there, early enough in the season, you will have to have a VMS system on your boat. If we can enact it as a civil penalty or just a licensing requirement if you've been convicted. And this way we don't penalize everybody, but we penalize people that we know have done something they shouldn't have, and it's just one time only. You don't have to be convicted 3 times. You get caught once, you're brought in front of the commission, and you know you're craving, you're oystering in a sanctuary, you're poaching on somebody's bottom. Then you have to have this. If you want to have your hand scrape license, then you have to have this on your boat. If you don't want to spend the money on it, that's fine. You're just not in the industry anymore.
Let me ask one favor of you. I agree with your approach in principle.
Mm-hmm.
Staff is still doing quite a bit of work on VMS,
okay,
working with contractor, looking at price that would be charged for the use of this thing. And I don't want to belabor this too much or delay it, but I would prefer, before we start holding public hearings, that staff be allowed some time to gather more information on that.
That's fine.
And get this subcommittee formed so they weigh in.
But you know, I don't want to see everybody punished.
I understand.
But I do want to see violators punished.
Yeah. Thank you. Mr. Fox?
I'm just going to ask the Colonel, Of those violations, how many were multiple violations to the same individual?
We do have some. There are several that are sitting on two. We may have one. I think Colonel Rose has that. Maybe one that's we're waiting on the court. One or two people for a third violation. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
But most of them are single people then?
Yes. One, two.
Non-repeat.
And there's only a couple that have been three charges within the 12 months. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Ms. Haney, we'll work and then we'll come this way.
Out of curiosity, the summons on the James River, how many of those occurred between 1 and 6 in the morning?
I would have to look at that data, but we have had several that were caught at night. We actually caught one boat that had 50-some bushels coming in at 4 o'clock in the morning. So we figured that they offloaded and then went back out at their normal time and went fishing legally. So, yes, they do that, and we caught, I think, a couple doing that. And we catch a lot leaving well before the allotted time.
One other question, yes. If I may. The private ground holders there, are the grounds staked properly? Or
yes.
That's
the majority. I wouldn't say all of them are, but the majority are staked, because that is a requirement for them to get their permits to be properly staked, and they are inspected.
Just... in conversation, heard of watermen going out with PVC poles in their boat and placing them wherever they like and dredging or scraping and then taking them up and leaving with them.
Absolutely.
Yes. They're not permanent. I mean, they can be moved, and sometimes they are moved, to be honest with you.
The other, along those lines, another trend that we have noticed is, appears to be a significant increase in the leasing of bottoms adjacent to public grounds or adjacent to other productive leases. And these are leases that staff would tell you, you know, the ground there is very poor. We don't understand why someone would want to lease that area. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say all of those leases are being taken up for illegal purposes. But it's quite easy for someone who's dredging on their lease, you know, in the middle of the night or even in the middle of the day when nobody's around, from crossing that line into what is otherwise productive public ground and taking advantage of that. We can't stop people from leasing ground. We have no way of determining whether they're going to use it legally or illegally, but it is something that has been noted and is of concern. Mr. Tank?
Yeah, I've, as I mentioned last meeting, I've heard about it in Oyster, the phenomenon of this problem in the James River. And it was from working honest watermen who say, I'm not even going to go over there because I can't make any money. And I think that's one of the things we have to keep our mind, keep a focus on, is not just the violator, but the folks who are there really violating, the guys who are playing by the rules. And that's why I think being aggressive and being a little tougher is going to be a good idea for us long term.
I have a quick question. What kind of penalties or punishment is the courts meeting out? And the reason for that question is the penalty a deterrent, a sufficient of a deterrent in these cases?
That would be hard to justify or quantify. Several of those violations are Class 6 felonies. Very rarely, if any, do they ever put them in jail, but they are sometimes hefty fines. So I would think it's somewhat of a deterrent, but I don't recall anybody on a first offense going actually getting prison time. So maybe some may think it's the cost of doing business. They get caught, pay a $500 fine or $1,000 fine. But you put them in jail, that may be different, but it's very rare, if at all, that they even put them in jail.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What would be the timeline on which we might see some of these violations coming back to the commission in terms of the multiple offender or repeat offenders?
I think Colonel Rose has an idea on that. He's tracking them right now.
It'll probably start next month.
Okay, thank you. You know, I think with respect to the enforcement of closed areas, a lot of times we take for granted on this side of the table that the enforcement might be relatively easy, simply because we're looking at a chart and we see an area that might be clearly delineated. And it's not limited to oysters. The striped bass situation in the EEZ is one that comes to mind, too. But, in fact, it's very intensive. I mean, it requires extensive personnel being deployed essentially constantly to monitor these areas effectively. So it's a very intensive demand that's placed on the agency and on law enforcement. And to that point, I think the evaluation of the VMS option is one that might be quite productive, because VMS is now used in a lot of fisheries. Scallops were one example, but there's a growing list of fisheries that utilize VMS just because it's so much less intensive from a manpower standpoint. But having said all that, I think as the commissioner states, it sounds like it's become an epidemic. And I think another aspect of this that the committee might look at would be what authorities other coastal states have as it relates to license revocation. Because just thinking back to some of the extreme cases we've had, when the striped bass poaching case came to light up in Maryland, Potomac, and Northern Virginia, those people came in here and our authority was limited to revoking the license for 2 years, despite the fact that it was a large-scale systematic poaching operation. And I'm not saying that all of these violations rise to that level. They certainly don't. But just reviewing that authority might be informative for the commission as well, because I think we've had an ongoing concern about the fact that violations result in penalties that may simply become a cost of doing business, and in those cases that there's not much of a deterrent. So
there was a bill in the General Assembly that dealt with license revocation. I'm going to ask John to just quickly summarize what we saw happening up there on that subject.
Well, there was indeed, there was a bill here, and it would have granted us some additional authority here to revoke licenses for more than 2 years, which is the maximum state law currently allows. The idea was to give us authority to go up to 5 years on egregious suspensions, but that did not pass the General Assembly. Instead, the bill passed that grants us the right to revoke fishing privileges in addition to licenses. And that closes the loophole for all those people who fish exempt from having a license. I took a look at some of the other East Coast states here who have license revocation authority, and I got to tell you, there are very few states that have less teeth than Virginia does when it comes to license revocations. There are many states on the East Coast that will revoke a license on one single offense. New Jersey will revoke a license for not reporting your harvest on time. If you're 5 days late, they have the authority to revoke your license. But something like that would take an act of a General Assembly here to give us some more authority.
Thank you. Any questions of John? Okay. Mr. Riley, did you have anything you wanted to add?
Yes, I decided to stand up because I couldn't see you from behind the podium, but once I stood up, I said I'm not sitting down. So The situation with the committees is progressing. That's what I wanted to report on. Colonel Lauterman gave a very good report, and I think all of us together, all the parts of the agency, can work together on this, and I'm glad to hear there's going to be a subcommittee of commission members. We've progressed a little slowly because there's been so many items related to crabs on the crab committee, fisheries on the finfish committee, and the shellfish committee really doesn't meet as frequently as those two other committees, and usually when they meet, it's on the harvest season coming up, it's on the replenishment program, and those have already taken place. So I wanted to ask two things. One would be to allow a little more time. I can appreciate what Mr. Palmer suggested, and I think that's a good idea. We need a little more time. We may, in fact, have to call the shellfish committee members, because the shellfish committee really has some of the most outstanding, and that's not in a good sense, situations with sanctuaries and condemned areas that anyone we've talked to would say that's a real problem. If you have a violation in a sanctuary area or in a condemned area, what on earth would it take three violations over a 12-month period to appear for the commission? So we probably will end up calling them. What has happened already, and I'm going to say it happened at least 2.5 weeks ago, Renee can correct me if I'm wrong on that, all committees received information with the offenses, with the types of offenses that there were, and had the ability to rank the severity of those offenses on a 1-to-3 basis individually, and then turn those forms into us. So far, we've received 5 forms back out of 18 from FinFish. Last night, they received another batch, so they wouldn't forget to fill those out. The CRAB committee's a little behind that, but in the same situation, and I think once we talk to the Shellfish Committee members, depending on how quickly the committee starts up, we can certainly have all those pieces together. So there has been a lot of dialogue with all three committees, less so with the Shellfish Committee, a lot more with CRAB and with FinFish, and we're heading in the right direction, absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Colonel. Well done. Let me just say, you know, we don't often hear from our law enforcement division on this side of the table, and I think we're remiss in that. Law enforcement is such a critical part of what we do here in this agency. It's half of the employees, for one. And if they're not successful, we lose all the other. The mission is lost. So I'm going to suggest that periodically we ask Colonel Lauterman to appear before us, perhaps quarterly, to update us on what he's doing and his staff are doing and what other issues are arising. You know, this morning we only talked about oysters, and I'm sure the Colonel could stand up here and talk about a number of other enforcement issues. Oysters is just the tip of the iceberg. You know, we could talk about offshore enforcement and FinFish enforcement and any number of things and see that we're up against the same kind of problem. So I think it would be good to hear from you, and we look forward to that. With that, I think we'll recess for lunch.